And good morning. That is our signal. It's 10:10 Eastern. We're so delighted that you've joined us this morning for episode 34 of Coffee with the Coder. We've just been chatting with our insiders before it gets started there. And I'm ready to toss the first question out to Paula Digby this morning. Morning, Paula.
Good morning.
This first question is coming from an inpatient rehab, and it's a lady that we have spoken with before. Her name is Taylor. She says, so should the ERPI have initial encounter and the coding summary say sequela? That's what I was told by another PPS coordinator in my facility.
Okay, yeah. Taylor, I think we've talked about this, and we've talked about this, you know, in multiple occasions, because this is one of those areas that every single time it seems like we do a review, we get questions related to this for the inpatient rehab facility. The ERPI, for the etiologic diagnosis, when it is an acute injury that is the cause of that admission, your etiologic diagnosis will be whatever that acute injury is with the seventh character, typically of A, if it is a closed injury. If we're talking fractures, you could have open or closed fractures, which you might be a B or a C. If it is a new acute injury, so you also have other seventh characters that can be used, but the most common one that you will see will be the seventh character of A. However, on the UB04 claim form, for the principal diagnosis, when you're coding for that document, the headset is the reason for the encounter is then the aftercare for that fracture. So your principal diagnosis or that injury, so that principal diagnosis would be that injury code, whether it's a fracture or a head injury or whatever, with the seventh character of D. However, let me just clarify something too, because your subsequent codes, your subsequent diagnosis codes that are listed in the comorbidities field, those should end with the seventh character of D on both the UV04 claim form and on the ERPI, unless it happened while the patient was in the rehab facility. If it happened while they were in the rehab facility, of course, you're going to have that A as a new acute injury. So there you go, Pam.
Thank you. And Taylor, thanks you. Now I'm going to move from Texas over to Ohio, and I've got another scenario that also happened in an IRF, and she says she's really needing some help. And so now here's an acronym I don't know, PAPE document. The chief complaint, weakness and back pain, history of present illness, a 59-year-old male with a fall from a ladder and onto a fence while removing Christmas decorations from his house. He suffered C7 to T1 subluxation sternal fracture of the thoracic spine and had surgical intervention and halo placement on the 13th. Still has numbness in hands and pain and eager and motivated for therapy without other complaints. The assessment and plan includes subluxation of C7 to T1 cervical vertebrae, continue the halo care and therapy, work on strengthening, monitor numbness and tingling in hands and arms, follow up with surgery. Transfer information documents central cord syndrome. Can I query the physician for central cord syndrome? The patient wasn't coded on admission and has been discharged now for about 2 weeks. The IGC assigned was 4.230 by the admission liaison, but there was no mention of central cord syndrome throughout the stay or on the patient assessment.
Okay, that's a good question. I think you went out a little bit, Pam, when you were reading the question. Sherry put in there, and she put SEH as the, she put a C7 to T1 subluxation, sternal fracture, and SEH, and I couldn't really find a standard acronym for SEH, although I believe she meant epidural hemorrhage, because I think it said somewhere else in the documentation. So, and then the patient was brought in for that C7 to T1 cervical vertebrae subluxation, and patient was in a halo. They were bringing him in for work hardening or work on strengthening, and they were monitoring for that muscle numbness and tingling, and now the patient's been gone 2 weeks. Here's one of the things. In reading the documentation that was provided or in your scenario, it doesn't look like a clear case where there is central cord involvement, although there very well could have been. Maybe the doctor just didn't describe those deficits so clear. It looks like they were monitoring to see if there was some type of, you know, maybe nerve involvement, where we might have gone with an impairment group for neuro rather than the cord. They put the patient in a cord impairment group, so that's questionable to me as to whether it should have been, number one, in cord. But number two, it may be a situation where at this moment, if the deficits don't line up with the fact that the patient is having true cord involvement, I would say there would not be a really evidence to stand on to query. In addition, and we're talking 2 weeks after discharge, in addition, there are some payers in some states who, you know, may not allow queries after a certain time frame or may not allow queries after discharge. I was unaware of that, but when I was doing an audit in one state, they said that their payer does not allow queries after discharge, that it has to be done prior to discharge. So I was like, well, I really hadn't heard of that, because it is many, you know, in our world of coding, we do queries after discharge, or we have for all the time. So it could have been a situation that maybe that person wasn't clear about. I just wanted to mention it because it may be your situation and maybe it's something I'm aware of. And please, you know, send in some comments about it if you know. So if the evidence doesn't support the central cord syndrome, I would say no, that there really wasn't a reason to query. But if the evidence and the deficits does look like, you know, hey, the patient really did have this condition, I would query the physician. Now, that doesn't mean we cannot send a leading condition, leading query, remember? We can't say, hey, doc, you know, please go back and document central cord syndrome. We can only lay out the evidence and ask for the physician's clinical opinion. So you can put, you can state things that are stated in the record and let the physician clarify. Let me say that as well.
Yes, always cannot be leading. Thank you, thank you. Okay, so it looks like this is almost all on Earth Day. Some of these might not be Earth, but the next one is from Pennsylvania. This was an email, and those of you who would also like to send in your question and you haven't figured out how, if you'll look at aq-iq.com, there is a little word questions in the blue and white bar near the top, and the drop-down takes you to Coffee with Decoder, where you can review all the previous episodes. Today's will be up late this afternoon, and you can send us an email telling us your questions. This one came from Donna in Pennsylvania. She said the patient was admitted to short-term rehab following a traumatic subdural hemorrhage and skull fractures. Gait dysfunction and debility were listed on the H&P. The patient is receiving physical therapy and occupational therapy. Coding a hemorrhage or fracture as etiologic, is it correct to be using the gait dysfunction debility as a principal diagnosis on the UB? Then, followed by the hemorrhage or fracture codes using the S for the seventh character as a secondary diagnosis?
Donna, and it's kind of like we went back to that same question, and Pam, it is. It's funny because it looks like all of them are IRFs today. Hey, hospitals out there, acute hospitals and physicians, we need you to send in some questions, okay, so we can answer your questions. But back to Donna's question, she is asking if the patient had a subarachnoid hemorrhage, for example, and skull fractures, what would be reported on the UB04 claim form as the principal diagnosis? Now, remember, just like we answered that first case earlier, it would be that subarachnoid hemorrhage, which is typically the most severe, or it's the most severe injury, would be listed as your principal that has that focus of care. That's the underlying reason for admission, with the seventh character of D, because that is the aftercare code, if you will, not the S. The S would be used for sequela. The patient goes away, you know, has this injury for a while, goes away, comes back, and they're having residuals associated to the fracture. At this point, we're still in the acute phase of treating that condition, and it's just the aftercare. So I guess I shouldn't say the acute phase, because the acute phase would be A, which is listed on the IRF pie, but for the UB's purposes, it would be the D, the aftercare, the initial aftercare. So what I should say to clarify that. So Pam?
Okay. Thank you, thank you. Okay, I think I heard you saying the D, right? D like David?
D like David, yes, thank you.
Okay, perfect. My sound just kind of went out. Maybe I've got a little not such a great connection. I think we've got time for one more. You?
Yeah, we have a few minutes.
Okay, so let me go down to Alabama. where Rebecca has also sent in a question with our Coffee Decoder, with Decoder email, and she's referencing ERF coding for the UB. A patient is admitted to ERF for care after an acute stay for sepsis, influenza, PNA, for example. The etiologic diagnosis for the ERF pod would be the acute condition. In the majority of cases, the patient is still being treated with meds for the acute condition, although it's not the focus of the ERF treatment. At discharge, is the acute condition coded as principal? And she's having to think about a specific situation. She says, according to my research, Zebra 51.89 would be more appropriate, but I've had this code flagged as an unacceptable diagnosis. The following reference state, Z5189 may be used as principal diagnosis, and then in 2018 coding guidelines, section 1C21C7, section 2K, AHA, coding clinic, Z5189 may be used as principal diagnosis if secondary diagnosis is present. All of this is just to ask, is Z5189 the principal diagnosis on the UB or the acute condition?
Well, let me say, Rebecca, what if you go back and look at the coding guidelines in the ICD-10 book for rehab, it says if the condition no longer exists, then, you know, that's when you would choose to select, you would either select the residual that is being treated or the aftercare, if you will, the Z code. But in this case, what you're stating is you gave examples of sepsis, influenza, or pneumonia, and you're stating that those conditions still exist. And if they still exist, then they would be used on the UB04 for that ERF encounter. However, if they no longer exist, they're no longer treated, then you're going to either report the residual that is the focus of treatment or the Z code, the Z5189 that you mentioned. So that's kind of how that works. But I created a logic tree, which doesn't work 100% of the time, but it's a logic tree that asks you in order to create your, or in order to determine what your principal diagnosis is on the UB04. And Pam, I need to supply that to you and let you post it on our website, AQIQ, and if you'll post it. Yeah, associated to this call today. And remember, I just want to give the caveat that it doesn't work 100% of the time, because there are occasions when it doesn't work, but it's the majority of the time it works, this logic tree. So at any rate, there you go, Pam.
Awesome. That'll help. Thank you. Okay, so now that we're running out of time, I'm going to assert up these names on my desk, everyone who asked non-anonymously, which was all four of you today. Yay. And somebody is about to get mugged with an official mug from Coffee with Decoder. So we're not going to hit you with it. We're going to mail it to you. We just call it up. And let's see who the winner is for.
Pam, I think you're going out. I hope you can hear me. We're waiting on the winner. I think your phone went out.
We look forward to seeing you on
Pam,
April. Oh, did I go away? I'm sorry. Did you hear my winner?
We did not hear your winner. You went away.
Oh, goodness. I'm so sorry. Okay, so Sherry in Ohio is our winner today. I drew her name out, and just about that time, my sound went out. I apologize to everyone, but I'll be reaching out to you, Sherry, to let you tell me where to send this mug. And as I said, we call it a mugging, but we're not going to hit you. We're just going to mail it to you, and we're excited to get your mug shot, which will be your selfie with your mug, or any other AQIQ-branded thing, such as our website. And please join us on social media with your mug shot. We do have a private page for insiders who have submitted mugshots, so we're looking forward to that. The next episode, number 35, will begin at 10:10 Eastern on 2 weeks from today, April the 16th.